The death toll from the powerful earthquake in Turkey and Syria tops 33,000 as hopes for finding more survivors fade. Israeli forces killed another Palestinian teenager in the occupied West Bank. Former President Jair Bolsonaro saying he is planning to return in the coming weeks to Brazil, where he's facing accusations of inciting riots. Now, it's been 6 days since a powerful quake hit Turkey and Syria. Some 33,000 people have been confirmed dead, and the death toll keeps rising. Officials and medics put the toll in Turkey at more than 24,600, and in Syria above 3,500. The UN aid chief who's visited Turkey's quake-hit area says the number could double. He says that the quake was the worst to hit the region in a century. Tens of thousands of rescue workers are scouring flattened neighborhoods despite freezing weather. According to the World Health Organization, almost 26 million people have been affected. Our correspondent, Damascus Mohammed Ali, earlier joined us with an update on relief efforts underway in Syria.
And we know that many countries have been trying to help Syria since this earthquake hit the country. Up till now, more than 60 airplanes coming from over 20 countries have landed in various Syrian airports loaded with humanitarian aid, on top of which, of course, those countries are Syria's allies and friends like Russia and Iran. Humanitarian aid is being distributed as much as soon as possible by the Syrian government, the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, and even NGOs and ordinary people have been trying to help as much as they can, exerting efforts, whether providing what they can with the food and medicine, or even trying to distribute alongside with the Syrian government and help those affected. However, more help is needed, but unfortunately, there are the sanctions on Syria by the United States and Western countries were not lifted. Nothing was probably offered from them, except for just yesterday, we heard that there were two airplanes coming from Italy that landed in Beirut, loaded with humanitarian aid for Syria. But search operations continue despite the fact that it has been 6 days, and hopes are fading for finding anyone alive still over there. But dozens buildings have collapsed totally, creating this disastrous situation in Syria.
Also, our correspondent in Istanbul, Rashan Saglam, has the latest about the situation in the quake-hit areas in Turkey.
It's the sixth day, and people are still coming out from under the debris alive. We still have hope, and of course, the rescuers still have hope. Just an hour ago, a man was rescued in Gaziantep city, and he is a 60-year-old man. He is handicapped, and he was rescued alive. So this still gives us some hope. Usually after the seventh day, people or the rescuers would stop looking for people or living under the debris. However, it is still working. And when speaking to experts, they said that this is due to the cold weather. Usually when it is in the summer or when the weather is hotter, it is harder for people to survive under the debris. But people are still coming out alive, which gives us a hope. If we want to speak about the logistically, the Hatay airport will be back as per officials to working next Sunday. As we know, the Hatay airport was severely damaged and is out of order now. It's not working. And it is very important for it to work again so that the medical support and any kind of support, nutritional support, can reach the Hatay area, because all the roads leading to Hatay are cut. The medical teams are using the small roads, which is taking them a lot longer to reach that area. So with the airport working again, it will facilitate the work of the aid people and the medical teams better.
In yet another act of Israeli atrocity against Palestinians, the regime troops have shot dead a 14-year-old boy in the occupied West Bank. He was killed as troops conducted a raid on the flashpoint city of Jenin. Two other Palestinians were also injured in the incursion. Israeli forces regularly carry out deadly raids in the West Bank under the pretext of detaining Palestinians. The latest fatality comes as Palestinians were holding a funeral for a man killed by an Israeli settler in the West Bank. Tel Aviv has stepped up crackdown against Palestinians, killing some 50 people in the occupied West Bank since the beginning of the year. Now, Brazil's former president, Jair Bolsonaro, is facing accusations of inciting riots in his country, saying that he's going to go back home from his retreat in the U.S. The far-right politician says he'll be back in Brazil in the coming weeks. Bolsonaro left his country several days before his supporters stormed government buildings in the capital, Brasilia. They were trying to overturn the election victory of his rival, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Bolsonaro is under investigation in Brazil for his alleged role in the January 8th assault. He denies any responsibility, but Lula accuses him of orchestrating what he calls the coup. The U.S. administration has also been under pressure to extradite Bolsonaro. The riots in Brasilia have been compared to the 2021 assault on the U.S. Capitol by supporters of former President Donald Trump. Russian forces are continuing to make headway in the battle for the frontline city of Bakhmut in eastern Ukraine. Russia's private military contractor is now saying that they have seized a village on the northern edge of the city. The leader of the Wagner group released a video showing its fighters to the entrance to Krasnohora. Ukraine's top military brass saying that Ukraine continues to hold Bakhmut and is trying to stabilize the frontline around it. Russia has been trying to capture Bakhmut in the eastern Donbass region for months. The city has turned into a key political and symbolic prize. The Wagner group has been leading the Russian charge in that area. As more evidence is emerging about the September explosions at the Nord Stream pipelines, Russia is calling on NATO to clarify the findings in an emergency session. A recent report by an American investigative journalist said that the U.S. destroyed the pipelines. We'll discuss that issue in the latest edition of our news review program.
Welcome to another edition of the news review. In this edition, Russia calls on NATO to hold an emergency summit over recent findings about September's explosion at the Nord Stream gas pipeline. Foreign Ministry spokesman Maria Zakharova says there is plenty of evidence obtained by journalists on the blasts and the motive behind them. On Wednesday, American investigative journalist Seymour Hersh said U.S. Navy divers destroy the pipelines on orders of President Joe Biden. The White House has dismissed the report as utterly false. Nord Stream pipeline sends gas from Russia to Germany. To discuss that further, we're joined by Greg Simons, researcher at the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies, who's joining us from Sweden. Also, we have with us Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, political analyst, and author, joining us from London. So, Mr. Papadopoulos, how true do you believe these investigative journalists' reports to be?
Well, first of all, I should say this, that the Kremlin's call for NATO to investigate the act of sabotage against the Nord Stream pipelines will fall on deaf ears. Why? Because America is NATO and NATO is America. If the US one morning was to decide to leave NATO, then by the evening of the same day, the Western military bloc would no longer be in existence. In addition to that, the reason why NATO was established in 1949 was to, in the words of Lord Ismay, the first Secretary General of NATO, to keep the Russians out of Europe, the Americans down in Europe, and the Americans in Europe. So it is not in the interests for the Americans to instruct NATO to investigate the origins of the explosions which rocked the Nord Stream pipelines in 2022. And given the amount of evidence, very persuasive evidence, which has been compiled by independent journalists, it is evidently clear that the Americans have a case to answer for. But alas, NATO will not investigate the matter. Last year, the Russians called upon the United Nations Security Council to investigate the explosions, but the Americans and the British blocked that, which was highly telling and highly suspicious. Perhaps the United Nations General Assembly can discuss the matter. But even if that was to happen, no action would be taken against America because, of course, America is a superpower. The Americans have used NATO to assist them in achieving mastery in Europe, which has enabled the Americans to achieve mastery in the world. So no matter how much concrete and persuasive evidence emerges indicating American guilt vis-a-vis the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines, nothing will happen against Washington.
Well, nothing may not happen against Washington, but that will definitely adversely affect the relations that Washington has, which is already tense relations with Russia. So how do you believe that can affect the bilateral relations between the two countries? Are we going back to a Cold War status?
Well, relations between America and Russia are absolutely atrocious. Yet, even though the Russians are aware that the Americans committed this act of sabotage against Nord Stream, the Russians understand that this matter will be effectively resolved on the battlefield in Ukraine. That is why the Americans attacked Nord Stream, to try and suffocate the Russian economy. If the Russians emerge victorious in Ukraine, which they will, then what happened to Nord Stream will just be another chapter in the very, very troublesome relationship between America and Russia. But we should also be aware that the attack on Nord Stream was not just an attack on Russia, it was also an attack on Germany.
Germany, exactly.
The Americans have been pressurizing the Germans for many years now to halt their import of Russian natural gas and instead to import American liquefied natural gas. So again, that the Americans attacked Germany is yet another demonstration of how the Americans treat their own allies. Germany on paper is independent and sovereign, but in reality, the Germans are beholden to America.
Okay, so Mr. Simons, in your opinion, as Mr. Papadopoulos brought up this very interesting point that this was not just an attack on Russian pipeline, this was also attack on Germany because they are the other end of this bargain. So how would that spell the future relations between the U.S. and Germany?
Well, what we've seen clearly during this Ukraine war and under Merkel, Germany was a vassal state of the United States. It had some small leeway of independent action in a foreign and security policy. However, what we've seen under Scholz, Germany's become a client state. It has no will of its own. It is just mouthing exactly what Washington is telling it. And I mean, the Americans are clear about what their interests are. I mean, if we go back to Henry Kissinger, I mean, he laid it out perfectly that this idea of a friend and foe in international relations when he said that the United States has no permanent allies nor permanent enemies, it only has permanent interests. And this is exactly what we're seeing here at a point in time when the United States' unipolar hegemony is in relative decline. So these actions in Ukraine and Europe, and likewise in China with Taiwan, these are attempts by the United States to claw back their hegemony again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Greg Simons, researcher at the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies from Sweden. Also, Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, political analyst, and author from London. Thanks to both of you for sharing your thoughts with us.
Welcome back. Moving on, Ukraine's Western allies are looking at more effective ways to arm that country. The UK is considering plans to set up factories in Ukraine to manufacture weapons and vehicles. British media is saying that the country's defense industry officials are in Ukraine to discuss plans to set up joint ventures to manufacture arms under license. Producers from other European countries are also in similar discussions with Ukraine. Early this week, Ukrainian President Zelensky traveled to London and Paris to appeal for more Western arms, including fighter jets and heavy long-range weapons. Britain has announced a plan to start training Ukrainian pilots to fly NATO standard warplanes. Now, Poland is saying that giving F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine requires a consensus among allies. The Russian embassy in Britain also warning that any delivery of British fighter jets to Ukraine would have serious military and political ramifications. And that brings us to the end of this newscast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 12th, 2023. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. And as yesterday, February 11th, happened to be the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, we congratulate all freedom-seeking and justice-seeking people around the world on this great occasion. Congratulations. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. And as you might know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And guess what? Yes. Tomorrow, February 13th, is marked as World Radio Day. World Radio Day celebrates radio as the mass media reaching the widest audience in the world. So, also congratulates to all radio enthusiasts on this occasion, especially to IRIB English radio listeners. And we've received reception reports from around the world, from Mohammed Fred from Malaysia, from Riccardo Paparazzi from Italy, and Jan Thornblom from Sweden, one of our old and regular listeners. So Mohammed, Riccardo, and Jan, thank you very much for sending us reception reports. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And we've received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. From Russia, we've received an email from Ivan Zeleny, one of our old and regular listeners. Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil has sent us an email. From India, we've received an email from Ratan Kumar Paul, one of our old and regular listeners, again from India. Here we have an email from Hemant Kumar, one of our regular listeners. And the last but not the least is an email from Finland, from Sixten Niman, one of our old and regular listeners. After a short break, I will be back with these great emails. Stay with us, please. So here from Russia, we've received an email from Ivan Zeleny. Ivan says, Salam to all employees of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I first heard the radio station Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran in year 2000. I like the programs about the history of Iran, traditions, and Iranian music so much. I also like to listen to local IRIB programs on medium waves. Thank you for the excellent and informative programs. And salam to you, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course from IRIB English Radio. I sincerely thank you for this email, and I appreciate you for your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast, as you found them excellent and informative. Eternally grateful. We wish you all the best, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, and please accept our electronic QSL as verification. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Ivan Zeleny from Russia. And from Brazil, we've received an email from Reginaldo Naldi. Reginaldo says, Dear IRIB English Radio friends, warm greetings from Brazil and happy World Radio Day 2023. Thank you very much for responding to my email and being in contact with me. Iran is a country with a rich culture and beautiful traditions. I would like to receive postcards or EQSLs from your monuments and sightseeing. Thank you very much. Salam and greetings from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. And thanks a lot for this email, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil. I appreciate your thoughtfulness for reminding us about the World Radio Day. Yes, February 13th is the World Radio Day. The cool thing about the radio is that it's still relevant and important in our daily lives. It's like a great friend, it's like a neighbor, the one who is always there and never lets you down. Anyway, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil, thank you very much for sending this great email to IRIB English Radio. And please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL from IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back, and let's see what Hemant Kumar from India says. Hemant Kumar, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has written this great email saying World Radio Day is an observance day held annually on February 13th. World Radio Day is about celebrating radio. That's why we love it and why we need it today more than ever. A day to remember the unique power of radio to touch lives and bring people together across every corner of the globe. I hope IRIB English Radio makes success. Thank you and good luck. Salam, Hemant Kumar from India, and thank you very much for this email. Congratulations to you on the World Radio Day. Yes, one day radio was invented, transmitting ideas hundreds of kilometers away around the world. And by radio, the world became connected. So let's celebrate the World Radio Day and radio and the interconnectedness it brings to us. Anyway, Hemant Kumar from India, thank you again. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And please accept our electronic QSL as verification. Again from India, we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners from Ratan Kumar Paul. Ratan Kumar Paul says, "Dear friends, I am a regular listener of your station. Hereby, I congratulate all the listeners of IRIB English Radio on the occasion of the World Radio Day. Salam and warm greetings to you, Ratan Kumar Paul from India. Thanks a lot for this email and congratulations to you on World Radio Day. Write to us soon and please accept our electronic QSL as verification. And after a short break, I will be back with you. This is Listeners Special, and from Finland, we've received an email from Sixten Niman. Sixten is one of our old and regular listeners. Sixten says, "Dear staff, I had the great pleasure to pick up Radio Kermanshah here in Nikarleby, Finland, this evening. What a nice surprise. I am enclosing a recording with a part of your broadcast, including station identifications. I would be very glad if you would verify my reception of your station briefly. Thank you very much in advance. Best regards." Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran and appreciations to you for this email, Sixten Niman from Finland. And what a nice surprise. I mean, picking up Radio Kermanshah of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting IRIB. We're very happy that the signals of Radio Kermanshah are received in Nikarleby, Finland. Such a great and long way. And that's great. As you might know, Kermanshah is one of the cities of Iran, which is located in western Iran. This city has many beautiful historical monuments. I hope once you visit this city. That's a great city. Hope you enjoyed the radio time. I mean, Radio Kermanshah. That was great. Anyway, 16 Imam from Finland, please accept our EQSL as verification. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Anyway, thank you, 16 Niman from Finland. We wish you all the best. Welcome back, and here we come to the end of our program. But before saying goodbye, I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Muhammad Fred from Malaysia, Ricardo Paparazzi from Italy, Jan Sonblom from Sweden, Ivan Zeleny from Russia, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil, also Hemant Kumar from India, Ratan Kumar Paul from India, and Sixten Niman from Finland. Dear listeners, please keep in touch with Listeners a Special Program and IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Amir al-Mu'mineen's early life in Medina was not that easy financially. And so during the early days, Amir al-Mu'mineen was not, we would not use the term affluent as in that way. But during the time of the three Khulafa, 23 to 24 years, Amir al-Mu'mineen was busy. Not on the political issues. He was busy in what is known as reviving the barren lands between Medina and Rabigh, towards Mecca. And I talked about it, you know, in detail in one of the Ramadan majalis a few years ago. And I think maybe there is a time sometimes to repeat that, because I don't think everybody would remember the details of it. But it's worth studying that part of Ali's life. In Islamic laws, there is a concept that if there is a land which is not owned by individuals, so it's not a private property. And it is a barren land where you cannot do any cultivation. If you are able to revive that, it's called Ihya al-Mawat, reviving the dead land or the barren land, that actually becomes your property as long as you work on it and the produce comes out. And Amir al-Mu'mineen used to go to those areas where it was desert area, mostly, you know, there was no source of water. And he, with his own hand, will start digging wells. And he will, you know, basically go very deep down until the water comes out. And once the source of water was there, then he would start planting palm trees, the seeds for that. And in a few years, you know, the trees came up and started giving dates, khurma. And this is not just one, two, three in the backyard or the front yard of our home. We are talking about, you know, huge parcels of lands. There is an area when you go from Medina towards Mecca for, you know, your Umrah or Hajj, you pass by an area known as Rabigh. This was an area where Amir al-Mu'mineen dug 5 water wells. It means at 5, you know, good distances. It must be a large area. And he planted, you know, palm trees there and asked one of his slaves that I make you in charge to take care of it. You stay here with your family. Work for 5 years and then you are free. And you can use the produce for yourself. But then he says, there was a portion of it, a large portion, he says, this is for sadaqah and charity. And this is not only there, even outside, you know, the city of Medina itself, even now if you Google, go to the Google Maps on Medina, you will see one of the suburbs of Medina. It says Abiyar Ali. Abiyar is plural of Be'er. Be'er means water well. Abiyar Ali means the water wells of Ali. It means even near Medina, Rasulullah, the Amir al-Mu'mineen would go and dig the water wells. And still that name, that area is now known as Abiyar Ali. In Rabigh, I was told by one of the ulama, he said, when you go there and stop, if your car or bus, you know, stops there, go and ask for, buy water water bottle. He says, look at the label there. It says, Be'ri Ali. Means the water well of Ali. Means those water wells dug by Ali 1400 years ago are still the source of water in that area. And he said, I have made these water wells as waqf, an endowment for the travelers and the Hujjaj caravan who pass by this area. And there were many other plantations where he would dedicate a portion for charity and the rest to maintain his own family. This was the source of the revenue of Ali and his children. And it continued till the days of the sixth Imam. Maybe even later on, because in studying their history, the further I could go was, you know, there was a dispute between the descendants of Hassan and Hussein. Who will be the trustee or the custodian of that endowment of Ali? It means those areas were still in the hands of the children of Ali. And it was producing revenue. And so by the time the Muslims 24 years or 25 years after Ghadir, exactly by the day on the 18th of Zulhijjah, 25 years after Ghadir, when the Muslims came to the door of Ali. And they said, Ali, we don't want anyone now but you. And at that time when Amir al-Mu'mineen, you know, accepted to become their Khalifa and their leader, The very first speech he gave, and I want to relate this with the source of revenue that he had. He says to them, "Inni hamilukum ala minhaj nabiyyikum," that I'm going to take you back on the path of your prophet, or the sunnah of the prophet. MashaAllah, people are known as Ahl Sunnah. But Ali realizes in that 24 years, they had deviated from the minhaj and the sunnah of the prophet. He says, "Inni hamilukum," I will carry you onto the minhaj of Rasulullah. And what was his minhaj? One of the main things he says that Rasulullah, whenever he distributed the Baytul Mal, the public treasury among Muslims, he distributed that equally. Arab, non-Arabs, Qurayshi, Ghairi Qurayshi, Muhajir, Ansar, doesn't matter. Everyone would be treated equally here. Master or slave. All the problems Amir al-Mu'mineen faced after that was because of that. Because all those who were used to the privileges in the last three administrations, they didn't like that. But then he makes a comment here. He says, remember, I will follow the same tradition of Rasulullah in distributing the Baytul Mal as long as I have a cluster of dates from my palm trees. I will not take my own share from Baytul Mal. So remember, a person who is depriving himself of his own share, don't expect from him to give you more than your share. But these words, as long as I have a cluster of dates coming from my palm trees. You wouldn't understand this khutbah until you look what he was doing in the last 20 to 23 years. You know, reviving the barren lands, and this became a source of income for him. So by the time Amir al-Mu'mineen now becomes Khalifatul Muslimin, ruler of the Muslim Empire, now he is an affluent and rich person. But this is where we say he is Imam al-Muttaqeen. A person who has a huge source of income, now that he is becoming the ruler of the Muslims, he decides to live a simple life. You know, many times we talk about Amir al-Mu'mineen, he was a very simple man, lived a simple life. It's not because of poverty. It was by choice. He had. Actually, the children were still living comfortably. But he himself, as the ruler of the Muslims, decided that no, I will live a simple life so that the most poor person in the Muslim Ummah and the Muslim Empire would be able to relate to me.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
British Petroleum, known as BP, has cut its climate pledges while reporting record-shattering profits. According to reports, BP is planning more fossil fuel output than expected after reporting a record $28 billion in profits for 2022. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout noted in this regard, BP, a London-based oil giant that has attempted to style itself as a leader of the renewable energy transition, announced recently that it is slashing its emission reduction goals and planning more fossil fuel output than previously expected, after reporting a record $28 billion in profits for 2022, more than double what it made the year before. Compared to its earlier plan to curtail fossil fuel production by 40% below 2019 levels, the company said it now intends to cut output by just 25% by 2030. BP correspondingly now aims for a fall of 20% to 30% in emissions from the carbon in its oil and gas production in 2030, compared to a 2019 baseline, lower than the previous aim of 35 to 40%, the company said in a press release. The oil giant also said it plans to pour just as much money, up to $8 billion, into its fossil fuel businesses as its so-called transition growth engines, which include renewables by 2030. BP's announcement came a day after the head of the United Nations said fossil fuel companies that can't establish credible plans to sharply reduce carbon emissions should not be in business. We need a renewable revolution, not a self-destructive fossil fuel resurgence, said UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. BP's decision to scale down its climate goals drew the ire of campaigners and scientists who stressed that growing fossil fuel production is imperiling global hopes of having and staving off even more catastrophic warming. Just when we need to be rolling back oil and gas production, BP is rolling back its climate commitments, said Doug Parr, Greenpeace UK's chief scientist, adding, "Don't let the spin disguise it. This looks like BP edging back to being a traditional oil company." Climate scientist Bill Maguire argued BP's announcement further demonstrates that fossil fuel companies can't be trusted to voluntarily cut production and potentially sacrifice short-term profits for the sake of the climate, no matter how splashly their pledges and rebrands. BP cuts its emissions pledge and plans a greater production of oil and gas over the next 7 years compared with previous targets, Maguire tweeted, adding, "This is criminal. Fossil fuel cores must be forced to stop drilling. It is our only chance now." BP is the latest oil and gas behemoth to report record-shattering profits for 2022, a banner year for fossil fuel companies, thanks in large part to the ongoing energy market impacts of the Russia-Ukraine crisis. In its fourth quarter earnings announcement, BP said it would boost its dividend and buy back an additional $2.75 billion worth of its own shares. The company repurchased $11.25 billion of its stock last year. Importantly, we are delivering for our shareholders with buybacks and a growing dividend, BP CEO Bernard Looney said in a statement, adding, "This is exactly what we said we would do and will continue to do, performing while transforming." Freya Atchison, oil and gas campaigner at Friends of the Earth Scotland, called BP's profits sickening and said fossil fuel giants are being allowed to bank billions in profits whilst millions of ordinary people struggle to pay their bills. Atchison added bosses and shareholders at these big polluters are being allowed to get even richer by profiteering from one of our most basic needs. The harm caused by the fossil fuel energy system couldn't be clearer, saying these companies are not serious about climate action or transitioning away from oil and gas. The evidence shows they're spending just a tiny fraction of their profits into truly green projects.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The second phase of the revolution statement addressed to the Iranian nation on the occasion of the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The adversaries of the revolution are strongly motivated in their efforts to spread distortions and lies about the past and even the present, exploiting money and all the necessary tools for it. The bandits of thought, creed, and awareness are ample, the truth cannot be heard from the enemy and his troops. The Islamic Revolution and the establishment that rose from it started from scratch. Firstly, everything was against us. The corrupt regime of Taghut Pahlavi tyranny, which in addition to its dependence and corruption, tyranny and being coup-based, was the first royal regime in Iran that was brought to power by the foreigners rather than by the force of sword. The government of the United States and some other Western governments, or the extremely chaotic situation inside Iran, and the shameful backwardness in science and technology, politics, spirituality, and any other virtue.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Secondly, there was no precedent experienced before us, and the path ahead of us had not been walked. Obviously, Marxist uprisings and the like could not represent a role for a revolution that emerged from the head of the Islamic faith and knowledge. Islamic revolutionaries began without an example and experience, and the combination of a republic and Islam, and the means for the formation and progress of it were not achieved except through the divine guidance as well as the luminous heart and the great thought of the late Imam Khomeini. As this marked the first brilliance of the revolution. Then the revolution of the Iranian nation transformed the bipolar world of that day into a three-polar world. And then, with the fall and disappearance of the Soviet Union and its allies and the emergence of a new poles of power, the new dichotomy of Islam and the arrogant front became a prominent phenomenon of the contemporary world and the focal point that is attracting the world's attention. On the one hand, the aspirated look of the oppressed nations, freedom-seeking movements, and some independence-seeking states of the world fixated on it. And on the other hand, it was screened by resentful and malicious eyes of the world's bullying regimes and blackmailer thugs.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at